This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Adam Rippon has accomplished one of his life goals, competing in the Winter Olympics. But while he was in Pyeongchang, he also became a star. He started by calling himself America's sweetheart. And soon enough, to a lot of people, he was. His viral moments and charm offensive and irresistible performances did not stop with the Olympics. He turned heads last year at the Oscars when he wore a leather harness, a piece of fetish gear prominently visible under a suit cut open across the chest to show it off against his shirt. He also brought his dynamic grace to Dancing with the Stars and won. And now he's out with a new memoir called Beautiful on the Outside. He joins us here in studio. Adam Rippon, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, first of all, I'm curious to know how you are and what you're up to these days. You've been doing a lot in the last, like, 18 months of your life. Are you a little dizzy?
I am. But I'm super grateful because I'm doing something that I love. You know, when I was at the Olympics, I had been an athlete for almost 20 years. And, you know, standing on the podium is a moment that so many of my friends who have been Olympic medalists told me that they had waited for their entire life. And for me, when I stood on that podium, it was an incredible experience, but it was for my friends, my family, my country. And I realized at the end of the Olympics, the moment I had been waiting for my entire life truly was getting to entertain and make people laugh and have those experiences. And so it's been a life-changing thing, and I've gotten to do really what I've always wanted to do my entire life.
You talk about how you as a kid kind of had this early affinity for entertaining the family and making people laugh, and that's just kind of part of who you are.
Yes, I remember being young, and I had this grand vision where we had this karaoke machine in my family's house, and I was going to invite the whole neighborhood and, you know, play some cassette that we found, and I had this idea that I was going to tap dance in front of everybody. I never had taken a lesson. And
that wasn't going to stop you, though.
It still wouldn't stop me today, and I still haven't taken a lesson. But I've always, I don't know why, I wanted to be in front of people. I wanted to make people feel good, and that's what I've always loved doing.
So you win in Pyeongchang, you win a bronze medal, you're on the podium, and then afterwards, your lifelong dream has come true, but there's still more life left to live. Mm-hmm. When did that begin to set in terms of thinking about, okay, I crossed this major milestone, now what?
Well, to be honest, it's a process, and it's a journey. And I feel really grateful for athletes like Michael Phelps who have talked about, you know, the struggle of transitioning out of being a competitive athlete. And I think that it's a very broad spectrum. You don't have to be an Olympian or a world level, national level, you know, athlete. You can be just identify as an athlete in the general sense. And leaving sport is something that's really tough to do. And it's been, you know, something that's been hard for me, but I am really lucky that I get to be doing these other things that I enjoy and love so much.
Was there a moment at which it kind of sank in like, oh, I have to rebuild, restructure, redirect my life now?
You know what? During this past year, yes, there have been moments where I'm like, what am I doing? And it's just for 20 years, you're so used to, you know, training and getting ready for these events. And yes, I say that I've loved being a performer and I've loved entertaining people. And it was this dream I had to be able to do it as a profession one day. I just had no idea that I was ever going to have an opportunity to be actually doing it. But it still didn't make leaving sport any easier. I miss it, but now I'm like, well, it's nice to have a cheeseburger every once in a while.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You get me.
You've also talked in the past about some of the sacrifices you've made, including diets that have been really intense, if not what some would consider extreme, to get to the point where you could even get to the qualifiers, let alone to the Olympics. Are there any of those particular sacrifices that you reflect on now differently than you did at the time? You know, time gives you some perspective on how you got where you are.
Completely. I think when I look back to some of the things I did now, or some of the things I did then, now I look back at them and I'm like, that was crazy.
Such as?
I think the diets that I put myself on, first of all, with no training in any sort of like dietary needs, I just decided that this is what I was going to do. But I would look around and I would see my competitors, and I was in my late 20s and my competitors were teenagers. And, you know, the body type is just different and you need to be as lean, as quick as possible. And I wanted to be the best athlete I could be, and I wanted to be as competitive as I could be. And I remember being like, okay, I've decided that I'm only gonna have, you know, yogurt, and that's it. I mean, not even a baby cow has that much milk.
Yeah, but you did it.
Yeah, but I did it. When I wouldn't recommend it.
No, I imagine not. When did you first fall in love with ice skating? When did that hook you?
Well, it wasn't immediately. But when I was a little bit older, I would go every, you know, once in the winter. And it's just, you know, from northeastern Pennsylvania, so we have those cold winters. It's just something that you would do in the wintertime, is go skating. And one winter, I went and I just enjoyed it so much, and I just kept begging my mom to bring me back to the rink. And then as a birthday present, I was signed up for the local group classes.
And did you discover early on that you had an affinity for it, or was it something you had to kind of work at?
I think it was the first sport that I did that was an individual sport. And I felt like I could focus on myself. You know, I was always the smallest kid in class. I got picked last to do a lot of different things. You know, at 4 feet tall in, you know, fifth grade, you aren't really like, they're not, oh, he's a prospect for the, you know, volleyball team this year. You know, it's like you get picked last. Skating was the first time I could just focus on myself and focusing on improving. And I loved it. I was so driven to get better.
How did getting better at skating dovetail with your personal coming out process? One is a very showy, very public, very performative sport. And then the other is, or can be, this very frightening transition where you're worried about people seeing you.
Completely. And I think for a long time, I used my sport as a distraction from dealing with my own personal life. You know, that I would deal with it later because I was focused on this. And I think that in the past, there has been a little bit of like internalized homophobia in skating. I think it's much better now. But I think people who were involved, you know, they didn't want to be part of that. You know, what everybody says a figure skater is, oh, if you're a figure skater, you're gay. And I hated that. I hated that people would tease me about that when I was young. I didn't want to be part of that, you know, statistic. And
but you were.
But I was, and I hated that about myself so much. I thought that I would never share it with anybody. And I realized that it wasn't a bad thing, and I realized that it didn't make me any less than or any or not as strong as my other competitors. And I decided that I was going to be over it, and that I was going to really be, you know, confident in my own skin, and it made me a 10 times better athlete.
Talk a little more about that internalized homophobia in skating. I think from the outside, you know, viewers will watch, say, Johnny Weir on NBC and we're like, you ain't fooling nobody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's funny, it's a joke. But on the other hand, when you're inside the sport, I can see how it would kind of grate on you.
Well, I think of somebody like Johnny, and because of someone like Johnny, I think it made my road a little bit easier. I think that when I was growing up and there were people like Johnny, I think that the conversation was, I wish he wasn't so over the top because it might be, you know, steering other boys who want to be figure skaters away. And, you know, because maybe their parents don't want them to be in a world like that or something like that or end up like that, whatever like that means. And, you know, that's not the case. That's Johnny, you know, expressing himself in a way that you can only do in a sport where you have to express yourself and have to show who you are. And I would say that sometimes there was a push for the people that were more, you know, could be, you know, more acceptable and accepted mainstream. And there was more of a push for that. But I think that at the end of the day, people crave more than anything is authenticity. And honesty. And you can see that through a screen. And you can tell when someone is really authentic right away. And I tried to remember that even in those moments where I was afraid that I would be possibly judged differently. But I felt like it was really important for me to share my story.
You also had some fans, some very prominent fans during the 2018 Winter Olympics who were pretty excited about your performance. Here is Leslie Jones, formerly of the cast of SNL, speaking on Today.
What's the best part so far?
Everything. I cannot pick a best part. I'm sorry. There's no best part. Everything has been incredible.
Adam's like, are you sure I'm not the best part?
Well, you know, Adam is the best part.
Now that you think about it.
That's Leslie Jones on Today, last year during the coverage of the 2018 Winter Olympics. You write in the book that during your Olympic routines, you convince yourself that you better do well or Leslie Jones would be mad at you.
Yeah, well, I mean, so on a serious note, I was so well trained to do anything, to do my best and to do my job. But, you know, that doesn't stop some, you know, crazy thought going through your mind of thinking that, you know, you're going into a jump and all of a sudden you think, you know, if I fall, Leslie Jones is probably going to put this on Twitter and be like, he should get up. And I'm like, I don't want that to be my legacy. Jones yelling at me. You know?
That one tweet from Leslie Jones, but it got you through.
You know what? She pushed me through. Yeah, of course. I was not going to fall in front of Leslie Jones.
Well, we got some other nicer tweets and emails as well from some of your other fans, including Olga, who emailed, watching Adam Rippon's Olympic skate set to The Arrival of the Birds and Coldplay's O gives me so much joy. I watch it all the time. It is beautiful, elegant, heartfelt. It is a piece of art. Thank you for sharing that art with the world. When was it clear to you, Adam, that you had made like a real impact on people with your performances?
I think I used to be embarrassed because I always wanted to be the best skater that like ever lived and the best skater in the event. And I never was. And I think that I was almost I felt like I had kind of failed myself at some point.
Define best.
You know, you win everything. Like the Simone Biles of figure skating, and I wasn't. But then I realized that my journey to being my best could be different, and I could share what I had in the best way that I could, and that I could be my best. And it's, you know, it takes a while to get there, and it took me a while to get to that mindset. But when I was able to do that, then I had real performances that meant something to me, and I had people tell me that they meant something to them as well.
One of our listeners asks, what's your favorite single performance from your skating career, and why? What's the favorite performance you saw live in an audience? Let's break that into two questions. Okay. Your favorite performance from your skating career?
I would say is my free skate from the team event at the Olympics. Just like a culmination of everything coming into one moment.
Why is that your favorite?
I think because I know all of the things that went into that specific moment, and the Olympics is just, it means so much to athletes that are in Olympic sports that it's just that moment was just such a buildup, and it's I can close my eyes and I can like smell the smells. I can feel what I was feeling. It's really such a vivid memory for me.
Give me an example of someone who's barely ice skated, being a native Floridian, mm-hmm. of the kinds of things that go into a solid performance that you might not think about unless you've done it. Like, what are some of those nitty-gritty technical or personal or mental or physical details that make a difference that audiences just don't see?
Well, I would say that your job as an athlete is to make it look effortless and to make it look easy. And for that to happen, you have to train 8 hours a day. It's a full-time job. You need to be fully prepared. And then when you get to the Olympics, it's dealing with all of the stress and all of the distractions that could be there. And if you're feeling really nervous, it's also maybe battling diarrhea. So it's just like there's a lot going on. You got to keep it together, do your best, and just focus on the right things. Focus on that training. You know, you can keep it together. You just have to stay focused.
To the other part of Adam's question, the favorite performance you saw live in an audience?
Recently, I saw this Russian girl. Her name is Kostranaya, and it was like a revelation. She's the most beautiful skater I think I've seen in a very long time. So she's incredible. I can't wait to watch how she develops.
You write about being able to interpret certain moves better than your peers when you were young. Explain that.
I think that I always was inclined to be more of a performer than I was a competitor. in the last few years of my skating career, I remember every competition I went into, I had to remind myself, it's just focus on the performance. It's just a performance. It's a show. Put on a show. And when I would get too caught up in trying to compete with the other skaters and not just, you know, keep it a battle within myself and focus on and being my best, when I was able to focus on that performance, that's when I had my best competitions. So it was always, for me, trying to focus on the entertainment aspect of it.
You mentioned that having to deal with the internalized homophobia in the figure skating world and just kind of navigate it anyway made you a better figure skater. I wonder how you see the expression of that through your figure skating. Like, I've heard a lot of people who react to you and say, oh, you know, he's so elegant or so stylish. I watched you perform and I was like, God, he is so strong. Like, I would look at you perform and I think, he must be that's a lot of power to put into your body. Mm-hmm. Because I view gay men as being strong, mm-hmm. and not just as being fierce or sassy.
Right.
Now, that's my interpretation. Maybe that's my internalized, you know, coming out process manifesting itself. But is there any of you as a gay man specifically in your performance?
I think
because I know there's some of that in me in my work as mm-hmm. a host. I know it comes out. Does it come out for you?
I think I tried so hard for it to not. But when you only have like 7 minutes in your whole life to show the world what you've got, how can you hide who you are? You aren't representing yourself to the best of your ability. So I felt like I really needed to embrace that. And then that was part of, you know, one of my favorite quotes is Lupita Nyong'o. She says, to be an actress, you need to know yourself so well so that you can interpret other characters through your own experience. And I heard that quote, and I remember thinking, I need to do the same if I want to consider myself an excellent competitor. And I thought about that, and that meant really bringing who I was to the table. And then as an out athlete, I owned that, and I was just really confident in who I was, and I brought that to every competition.
One of our listeners tweeted, our whole family fell in love with Adam during the Olympics, and his outgoing personality and that smile is so wonderful. We've continued to cheer him on in the years since. Keep doing you, Adam. We will talk about how you are doing you these days. When we continue our conversation with Adam Rippon, his new memoir is called Beautiful on the Outside. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Uber. Uber is committed to safety and to continuously raising the bar to help make safer journeys for everyone. For starters, all drivers are background checked before their first ride and screened on an ongoing basis. And now Uber has introduced a brand new safety feature called Ride Check, which can detect if a trip goes unusually off course and check in to provide support. To learn more about Uber's commitment to safety, visit uber.com/safety.
Maddie Sofia here, host of Shortwave, a new daily science podcast from NPR. Listen for new discoveries, everyday mysteries, and the science behind the headlines, all in about 10 minutes. It'll be fun. You'll learn some stuff. And yeah, it's gonna get a little weird, 'cause science. Listen and subscribe now to Shortwave from NPR.
Back now to our conversation with Olympic medalist and figure skater Adam Rippon. His new memoir is called Beautiful on the Outside. How do you stay active now in the world of competitive skating now that you have kind of retired from competition? You were telling me during the break that you view it very differently now from the outside.
Well, seeing it from the outside looking in, I really appreciate how difficult it is and all the work that goes in. I don't have a lot of time to be in the rink now, but when I have the chance, I go in and I work with some of my old coach's students to help him out because he always helped me out. And I do it and it's almost like a passion project. I get to do it and I enjoy being out on the ice and I love it. And so I love that I can have, you know, still, you know, one skate on the ice.
What are some of the things that you find yourself counseling young skaters on? Like, what do you think you've learned and are most often imparting to skaters as they're growing?
I think the number one thing is that you're capable of doing more than you think. And that's what I did in practice, where like every time I thought that, you know, I was so tired I couldn't do any more, I always did two more. And just doing that, it felt like I was walking the extra mile. I was just doing that one extra thing so that when those doubts would creep in at competitions, I just could say to myself that, no, I pushed myself as hard as I could. And I think that that is such vital information and such a vital lesson that you can take into any competitive space and any space and any job that you do.
If you knew then what you know now, anything you would have done differently?
Maybe had more than just yogurt.
For starters, yeah. A rice cake,
yeah.
Half a rice cake,
peanut butter,
a little peanut. Don't let's get crazy now.
I think if I could have done anything differently, so like in the book, I wanted to share a lot of my failures and a lot of the times that I felt like I had setbacks, because like in those moments when I finally sat down and reflected on them and I learned from them, that's when I had my most success. Because when I had nothing to lose is truly when I was the most unafraid to go after what I wanted.
Any one particular failure that stands out the most to you?
For me, the biggest one was not making the Olympic team in 2014, because at 24, I felt like it was probably my last legitimate chance at making the Olympic team, and it felt all over in the blink of an eye.
Now, how old are people usually when they make a team like that?
I would say that they're anywhere, at like a very normal age for a male single skater would be anywhere between 18 and 22. And that's a very good prime age of going to the Olympics. And, you know, at 24, I was really pushing it to go for the first time. And in that moment, I felt like 28 was so far away. I didn't even know how healthy I would be or if I wanted to continue doing this. And I just felt like I wasn't good at anything else. I felt like maybe I had wasted all of this time. My parents had wasted this time. And I felt so low. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. But in those moments, I tried other things. I realized that I was good at other things, that I was worth more than just, you know, the time that I spent on the ice. And from that, I gained a lot of confidence in myself and had to grow like a thick skin.
So you tried other things, and it seems that trying other things kind of brought you back to what it is you initially wanted to do.
Absolutely, because I felt like at the end of the day that if I didn't do well at a competition, I still was a good and well-rounded person, and I still did good things for the world, and I still put out good energy and made people feel good about themselves. And for me, that's what made me feel like I was worth more than just a few performances.
And yet in the middle of all this, you've also got to deal with your continual coming out process and figuring out who you are and how you identify and how you want to look and walk and talk and dress and act and, you know, when and whether to become sexually active. Like, there's all this other stuff going on internally as you are figuring out what to give to other people. Mm-hmm. You still have to feed yourself.
Absolutely. And I think for a really long time that was hard for me, because I could use all of those things as sort of distractions from like dealing with my own stuff. And I had to take time and deal, like, you know, life kind of takes its course and, you know, life catches up with you. And all of a sudden you have to start dealing with things that you were like, oh, I'll just wait until later. And when I dealt with them head on and took on more experiences and, you know, got into relationships for the first time, that's, you know, I grew up and I needed to grow up.
Was there a moment when it kind of hit you and where you had to stop running from it and deal with it?
Yeah, and it was and it all kind of happened at once. And I think that that moment of not making the Olympic team in 2014, it was a professional setback, and at the same time it was like a, you know, everything kind of coming down and crashing at once. It was personally I had to start dealing with a lot, and I did. And I did it all in those moments and all at once. You know, when it rains, it pours. And it was pouring.
Who was the most supportive to you in your coming out process? I know today it's for younger people, it's a mix of people in their lives physically and also online. Social media has made a gigantic difference in the coming out process. What was it like for you?
I think the things that inspired me the most were reading about other people's coming out process. And that's what really inspired me to share my story, because through them, I felt the most seen. I felt not alone. I felt like I would be okay and everything would be fine. Obviously, my friends and family were there for me, and you know, the way that they thought about me and treated me didn't change, and I consider myself really lucky. But then if you ever have this coming out experience, you realize you gain this other whole group of people that become family and have your back as well, which is just, you know, it's a really beautiful moment. And I would say, you know, I hope everyone has some sort of coming out experience in their life, because that's the moment where you have to say who you are to the entire world. And it's a liberating moment.
Elaborate on that a little bit. When you say that you hope everyone has a coming out experience, is there more within that experience that you hope people are able to be or do or experience since coming out, especially for young people? You know, there's one statistic that shows that gay kids who come out to their parents, LGBT kids who come out to their parents, stand a 50-50 chance of being thrown out of the house in that moment.
Well, and when I say have a coming out experience, I mean that in that moment, right before you tell that first person, you're owning who you are. You have accepted this part about you that you might be afraid to share, and you are declaring to this person and in effect to the world that this is who I am. And it's a liberating moment. And I think that sometimes to some people it has consequences, but at the end of the day, everyone will find those people that will stick up for them. And there's a whole community of LGBTQ plus people out there to protect and to help so many younger LGBTQ people along the way, that they're not on this journey alone. And for me, the most shocking thing and the most like incredible thing to see is meet so many young kids come up to me and they'll tell me about how me sharing my story has helped them and their experience of coming out, which is almost surreal. And it's what I wanted to be able to do, and just that I actually have been able to do that, is it's really humbling.
Yeah, that's partly what some of our listeners have been writing to us about, including Jordan, who emailed, "Adam, I followed your Instagram stories from the Olympics and Dancing with the Stars. We all have our struggles, but the hope that you've given others to be proud no matter what shows that not only are you beautiful on the outside, but on the inside too." You also did a lot of media after the Olympics, including an appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres Show. Here's part of what you said.
You know, I'm an openly gay man competing at the Olympics, and somebody who thinks that gay people might be the societal collapse of our nation, I didn't feel like it was the right time. If I had the chance to have a call with him now, you know, I have nothing to say to Mike Pence. That's not a conversation for me.
Part of your appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres Show, you famously declined a call with Vice President Pence during the games over his record on LGBTQ issues. You are the first out gay man to compete in the Winter Olympics. How do you reflect on that now, on the intersection of being openly LGBTQ and all of the socio-political baggage that that can bring with it?
Well, you know what? In a way, just being an out athlete at the Olympics is sort of being a political act. And it shouldn't be, but it can feel that way. I felt like it was important for me to share who I was and have these really honest experiences at the Olympics. And I remember being asked what my thoughts on Mike Pence leading the athlete delegation were. I told myself that in that moment, you know what, I'm going to answer this question honestly. I'm going to take it head on. And then when the office of the vice president did reach out, you know, I was preparing for the most important event of my life up until that point. I had been waiting my whole life to compete at an Olympic Games. And I felt that this was more of a photo op for the vice president than it was an opportunity for me to really say anything to him. And to be honest, that conversation isn't for me. It's for, you know, the people in Indiana who their lives have been really affected by legislation he's pushed. It's for, you know, that black trans woman who can't feel comfortable walking down the street, and he's made her feel even more ostracized from her own community. It's for those young gay kids that get kicked out of their home and their parents are led to believe by this man in charge that, you know, that they are right in doing this, that, you know, their child is sick, and it's not right. And it's those people who deserve to have the conversation with Mike Pence.
We're speaking to Olympic medalist and figure skater Adam Rippon. We'll have more after this. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. The Grow with Google initiative supports small businesses by providing free digital skills workshops and one-on-one coaching in all 50 states, helping businesses get online, connect with new customers, and work more productively. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating. That helps other people find the show. And don't forget, you can catch the news roundup at the end of every week.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of the TED Radio Hour from NPR. And on our latest episode, we're exploring anger, what it is when you feel it, whether some get to feel it more openly than others, and why. Listen now.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're speaking with Olympic medalist and figure skater Adam Rippon. His new memoir is called Beautiful on the Outside. Let's get to some more of your questions. Aileen asked, do you have to be wealthy to be a figure skater?
I mean, I wish I was wealthy when I was a figure skater.
But you've talked about making a lot of economic sacrifices.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember that, you know, I did whatever I could to get by. And there was a time where I didn't have a lot of money. My parents didn't have a lot of money growing up. And they, my mom worked a lot. My mom learned how to drive the Zamboni so that she could, like, clean the ice in the morning so I could skate really early. And in my 20s, when I was paying for skating on my own, I remember that I, couldn't afford a lot of groceries. So I would take all the apples that they had in, like, the gym locker room. And I was like, this is a bargain. And it can be a real sacrifice. You don't have to be wealthy, but you do have to. I think what I did was I spent a lot of time on my own and working on my own to improve myself. And I practiced a lot on my own because I couldn't afford a lot of coaching. So there were a lot of sacrifices.
And then interestingly enough, in terms of your finances, there's a chapter in the book where you write about taking over control of your finances from your mother. How do you reflect on that?
Well, I think that, you know, it's a balance because I think my mom didn't want to feel like she was just leaving me, and that she wanted to know that she was still, you know, still supported me and was still involved. But I was kind of coming into my own as an adult, and I didn't want the pressure of feeling like I was letting my family down or wasting their time or wasting their money. And I said that I need to do this on my own. And that was really important to me. And it was something that my coach said. He said, you know what, at the end of the day, every competition, every decision you make for your career, you need to know that, like, if it goes well, I did that on my own. And if it doesn't go well, I did that on my own. And I have to do better because I don't have a choice.
Your coming out story certainly motivated Jeff to tweet, everyone deserves a coming out moment because it's validating and confidence generating. And everybody includes everybody. I have to ask you before I let you go about just kind of the way that you've been able to be very public and kind of build this following, being very playful. I want to know about the leather harness at the Oscars. Because mm-hmm. when I was watching and I saw that on the red carpet, I was like, yes, I love it. I was so impressed. But there's got to be a story behind that.
So it's not as impressive as you might think. But I here's the thing. I remember that while I was skating, I took chances and I did things that I wanted to do and what I thought was cool. And going to the Oscars, I was invited and I was like, nobody's really going to care that I'm there. I'm just, you know, I'm going to the Oscars. And I was really lucky to meet Jeremy Scott, who dressed me for the Oscars. And he had so many options and he has no ego. One of the nicest people I've ever met. He took me through his closet of things that I could try. And I saw the harness and I was like, this would just be so cool. I think this would just be so cool.
Was that the first time you had seen a harness?
No, I had seen a harness. So actually, when I was getting my Olympic costumes done, I took one of my friends who's not gay to Chi Chi LaRue's in, like, West Hollywood because I saw this other harness that he made my skating costume be inspired by. So I had dabbled in the art of, you know, a harness.
I have so many questions.
I probably didn't have so many answers.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And now we're getting called off.
If ever, I hated hearing the music. Damn it, Jake. Adam Rippon, Olympic figure skater. His new memoir is called Beautiful on the Outside. Adam, thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Chris Castano and Gabrielle Healy and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow for the roundup. This is 1A.